Tonight on Coast to Coast, Missing and Presumed Dead, A Psychic Search for Justice. It's an amazing story. Gail St. John joins us in just a moment. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Gail St. John, raised in a psychic family with her mother and maternal grandparents practicing psychic and spiritual beliefs. Now, Gail has been a practicing psychic since she was little, and she's been teaching psychic development classes, also doing private psychic readings for more than 35 years. She spends a lot of time working on murder and missing persons cases. Gail is part of an Indiana search team as well as a volunteer canine handler, and there's district task force in her area. She herself has many certifications and credentials in search and rescue, and here she is on Coast to Coast. Hiya, Gail. Great bio here. Good to have you with us.
Oh, great. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, let me ask you a little bit about a volunteer canine handler. How did you get to do that?
You know, it kind of went along with what I do as far as looking for missing persons. And I ran into some issues, you know, just into normal searches, if someone is buried, things like that. I thought, listen, let's. You don't go work on your car and just walk outside with a screwdriver.
No, not at all.
You know, because you're going to take the whole toolbox. And I thought, okay, this is part of the toolbox. I need to do this. Next thing you know, I'm more than waist deep in this.
Well, let me tell you something. It's an amazing field that you've been in, and we're going to get into all the various aspects. Now, let's go way back, Gail, when you were a little child. This, no doubt, is hereditary in your family, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was a closely guarded secret until I came along.
Why?
You know, you got to think back in the day and age. You know, taking us back to the 40s, the 50s, so taboo. Even in the 60s, still very taboo. I mean, we were going through flower power and all the stuff, but very taboo. And I was told as a child, see, we just don't talk about this, okay? We just don't mention this to people. But when my first experience happened to me at about 4 years old, it showed me something that was wrong with that statement, because I was playing with friends. My mother was talking to the neighbor, and I was playing with their kids, and I turned around, and their house was on fire.
Their house was on fire?
Well, I thought it was. I mean, it was. I mean, in what I was looking at, and I turned around and I shook my head and looked again, and it wasn't. Uh-oh. And everybody looked okay. I mean, I'm looking around, and everybody's just going about their business, and I felt like, wow, I'm out of sync. And all of a sudden, I got scared, and I ran home, ran and talked to my mom and my grandmother, and this is the, you shouldn't say this. Even if you saw it,
keep
don't
it quiet.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm like, okay, but it was probably a year, well, there shortly, a few days later, the house did catch fire.
Same way, the way you saw it.
Yep. I mean, thank goodness everybody got out and it was safe, and it didn't turn out to be horrible other than them losing, you know, part of their house.
How did you feel?
I was kind of distraught, taken back, but as a kid, you know, you don't grasp all of it. You know, I'm 4 years old. Your ability to really think about things on a long-term basis isn't really developed. I think it really hit me at about the next year. When you hit that five mark, five to six, when you go, huh, what if? What if they had been injured?
And you didn't tell
them.
And
I didn't tell. Well, then I'm a bad person.
Or culpable, or whatever.
Yeah.
You feel guilty.
And then that hit me, like, this could have been awful. You know what? And I told my mom after, I can't shut up.
Did you use this growing up for your own life?
Absolutely. Even though it's sometimes you know, the funny part is I say, you know, sometimes I don't listen. I'm like everybody else. I'm human. I would know the right thing to do, and be stubborn and turn around and do the wrong thing. Of course, it didn't work out, of course.
Yeah, it never does.
No. But then, you know, you live and learn.
So how did this evolution occur for you where you started helping law enforcement?
I was roughly about 17 years old. And there was an incident that took place prior to this home that we moved into, and the kid was actually missing. Now, mind you, at 7 years old, I told my mother this is what I was going to do with my life. You know, it was kind of out of the clear blue. There was somebody that went missing in television, and I said, oh, that's what I'm going to do. And my mother was like, okay, yeah. You know, like, no big deal, right? By the time I reached the stage where we had moved into a home and the boy had been missing, and he used to live in that house. I didn't know this at first, but I kept seeing him, and he kept talking to me. And at this point, I didn't know exactly what to do. I did know where his parents lived, but I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
You know, stir up problems. So I kind of sat back and I ended up, I had a few friends that I could talk to. Thank goodness. And
they understood you, did they?
Yeah, the few that I had, you don't have a lot of friends when you're like that. Most parents tell the kids to stay away from you. You know, that, like I said, that's part of life.
That
people
Gail
understand.
Girl, she's nuts. Stay away from her.
Yeah, well, right? They would tell their kids that I was a witch. It was a strange time back then.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, you know.
Well, you would have been burned at the stake during the Salem days. You know?
Hey, I'm still afraid of that some days.
Yeah.
You never know. But, you know, I it was when I got this information, and I absolutely didn't know what to do. Well, a friend actually was a police officer, and she said, can you tell my dad any of this? And I'm like, I don't know, it's kind of, you know, maybe a little embarrassing, or, you know, he's going to think bad. She goes, no, my dad's a really open person. So I did. I told him what happened. Well, lo and behold, a month later, they did find his body.
Ah.
And
what, was he murdered? Or
he was murdered.
He was murdered, okay.
Mm-hmm. 15 years old.
Did they ever find the killer? Did you help them find the killer?
In that case, I did not help find the killer, but the body was exactly as I had described and where.
Now,
I didn't know the actual location.
But let me ask you this, Gail, because I've known a lot of law enforcement who don't believe the psychic realm, and so I'm asking if you were considered as a suspect when you tell some police officers information that only you and the killer know, and they know, they kind of look at you differently. There's no question about it.
Oh, absolutely. I was called in and on a case, and I talk about this case in the book.
Missing and Presumed Dead.
Mm-hmm. And the King of the One Word Clues is the chapter, but I was pulled in on that case when I got to the police station after making the location of the body, and police were notified. They sat me down, and I'm assuming they just want to say, hey, you know, okay, what went on? Where exactly? What did you see around? Any, you know, all of a sudden they're in my face going, why did you do it?
Whoa, just like that.
Just like that. I'm like, so, because I thought, I was kind of, you know, taken back. I thought, okay, you're being very rude. And a bit on the...
rude is not the...
No, what side? And I'm thinking, okay, I can join that group of you people. I have a side that's kind of a, you know, cocky. So, you know, I said, well, I thought I'd take somebody out that I didn't know. I said, are you kidding me? I had never met these people before. I certainly never met this person. If you'd have been doing your job, you would have found him 6 months ago.
So did they back down?
He kept saying, he goes, well, we know you had something to do with this.
See, they don't believe you. That's why.
No, absolutely not. And I think sometimes, and I tell people this, when you're upset, sometimes it actually can enhance your ability. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. And at that moment, I just blurted out the responsible party. I mean, I just was spewed it all out, and it's like, and then I thought, okay, I don't even know where that came from.
Did you have anybody come to your defense?
I did. I had actually worked on a case with the father. He lived in the area I lived in, and his daughter was from another state. And I worked on that case and was able to help the detective locate her remains. He came and showed up. He found out what was going on through my daughter and my, husband. And he showed up, and I guess he just burst into the police station saying, "What is the wrong with you people?" And he just, said, "How dare you do this?" He goes, "You needed to get a hold of this detective, over here in this area, and he'll tell you." So kind of went that way, and finally they did let me go. But that was not a good experience.
And at what point did they start calling on you to help?
You mean at what age?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what was it that got them to start believing you?
In that area, I'm not sure that they ever really believe.
Really?
No, it's
even to this day.
Even to this day, even though I, was from the area, you would think, but no, I'm not sure they really do. I think there's a lot of kind of that hard-nosed, old-style thing going on.
Are you still helping police?
Absolutely.
In how far? Regionally, nationally, internationally? How far do you go?
Internationally.
Okay. And you physically don't have to be out there, though, do you?
I don't have to always, but for the most part, when I get a chance, I'm out there. I like to put my money where my mouth is. If I'm going to say I think someone is in a certain place or certain area, if I can get there, I'm going, and I'm going to do the search.
Now, they're not all crimes either, though, Gail, right? Somebody might get lost, and they might die out there, or have you found people who are still alive?
I have, and unfortunately, I found, ones that are deceased. So it's a good feeling to bring someone home that's been missing. And even if it's human remains,
there's closure there.
I don't know if I ever want to call it closure. I don't know if those people can ever have closure, but it gives them that, at least the knowing of what happened, where they were.
In the cases where someone's been killed, one, what's the percent of your involvement that you find that person, the dead person, and two, the killer?
So, there's so many factors in that. And I'm not one that knows how everything works on the other side of life and death. And there's timing, there's different aspects. But if I work a case and I say I'm going out, the odds are pretty high, the percentage is pretty high that I'll make the location. And you got to remember, I'm taking my other tools with me too. So if I can get in a general area of search, and I can get, the biggest thing is going on the legal end, and you have to have permission to search.
Okay.
You can't just waltz on somebody's property.
Yeah. So when you go through the process of how you get sense where the body is, and then maybe the killer.
Well, there's several things they do. Mostly my focus is first on the body, because there's still that possibility of evidence. And you know, I'm one of those people that feels, hears, sees. I get it all. The whole gamut. I get it all. And sometimes it's kind of dumped all on me, and it's just the whole, everything disappears like a television in front of me, and I begin to see the scene play out as to what happened. The other way is I do what I call a blind drive. And a blind drive is I go to where they say the person was last known to have been seen. The reason why I'm doing that is I'm looking to pick up their energy that's there. Everybody leaves a vibration. It's like a cell phone wave. And it's like your own personal DNA. Every person feels differently. Mm-hmm. So if I can go there and I can pick that up, I can follow that. I can tell you if it's getting stronger or weaker. Should I go another direction? And I search them out by doing that.
All right. So when you see the victim, do you reenact or see the crime itself?
I frequently see the crime itself as it actually played out, though I can turn it off.
Are you like the victim when you see it?
You know, a lot of people ask me that, but no. It's more like I'm watching it play out, but you still feel the same emotions.
Yeah.
As you're watching something like that happen.
But you can be specific and tell law enforcement what happened?
Pretty much most of it.
Jeez. Now, how do you go about finding the killer?
Well,
because you don't know their name, or do you?
Sometimes I get their name.
Mentally, you mean? Psychically?
Psychically, I'll get their name. A first name, something I can go on.
A car? Will you see a car? Maybe a license plate?
A car, a color of a car. Where is the basic? Just like I'm tracking down the missing person, I can track down the person who did this. Same basic techniques of tracking. It just feeling that vibration, feeling what went with this. When I'm doing a blind drive, I may pick up on the killer because the killer is with them. I worked a case with two children that had been murdered, and I tracked in order to find the remains. I couldn't feel the children properly. I tracked the one that killed them.
How did you do that?
Picked up the vibration. I felt the children and the presence of death, followed the vibration, which was connected to this other person. I'm saying, why is these children connected with this? But I can't feel them right. They're gone. But I'm feeling this other person who's with them. This has got to be the killer. So I began following that vibration.
Jeez.
It took me two states away. I drove there.
Now, have you ever been confronted by the killer directly?
I got an email one day.
What did it say?
And this was really, really, I'm reading the email like I do. I get hundreds of emails, and it says, would you help me find my wife? And when I hit that point, all of a sudden, I just heard the loudest voice, of course, not my own, saying, well, why would you want help finding your wife? You know where she is. You killed her.
Whoa.
I'm like, hum.
That's what you felt?
I heard it. Loud and clear. I just kind of looked at the and went, okay, great. This is just going to be.
The killer emailed you.
Emailed me. So I sat down and I gave it a day to think about how to handle it. So I went ahead and emailed him back.
Hold on right there. We're going to take this break and come back. The killer emailed you. Gail St. John with us. Her book is called Missing and Presumed Dead, A Psychic Search for Justice. Wow. We'll be back. Welcome back to Coast, Gail St. John with us, of course. We're talking about her world in the psychic realm. Missing and Presumed Dead is the name of her book. So let's get into this story about the killer emailing you, Gail. That is bizarre.
Yeah, it really is bizarre. I mean, and I felt just creepy. You know,
you could feel it. You get the willies. Your hair rises, you know?
And I, like I said, I had to sit on it. You know, I wanted to make sure that I was doing the right thing. Was I handling it the right way? So the next day,
Well, now, did you email him back and say
absolutely.
that? Why do you want to know where she is? You killed her?
No,
Oh, okay.
I went with, okay, I can try to help you with this.
All right, so you're playing it straight.
Absolutely.
All right.
So, I ended up going to the area where this case took place, which happened to be quite a few states away. I was very uncomfortable riding around with the killer.
Do you call or did you call law enforcement first?
I did not because,
That's
you know,
kind of
that's one of those,
dangerous.
yeah, but you can't do that. I'll tell you why. So the phone call goes sort of like, "Hi, I'm a psychic, and I think this guy killed people, and I'm going out in the vehicle with him, but I want to tell you know, that I think he did this." And they'll go, "Next."
All right, let me jump back a little bit. How did this apparent killer find you in the first place?
He had come across another case that I had worked.
Had you worked on his wife's case?
I hadn't.
Not at that point. Okay.
Right,
All right.
until he invited me in.
Okay, so he finds out about you from other cases. I guess he's doing his own research, right?
Yeah, he's doing his own research, and people do that kind of stuff. But he was trying to sort of look like he was proactive.
In trying to find her.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a
Okay.
great cover up, I guess.
And at the same time, he's wondering, will she really find out or not? Because if she does, I'll kill her.
Well, I had that feeling.
Me too.
I thought it was, I was kind of scared. I was in his vehicle,
Did you have a weapon?
alone. No, not at the time. And I was very paranoid, but I thought to myself, okay, you have to stay calm because you're going to know if something's going to happen.
So you go to his town and you meet him, and are you uncomfortable?
Very,
Can he
very uncomfortable.
sense that?
I think there was a certain amount of, he was more of a little paranoid that I might really come through.
Did he have the look of somebody who had done something?
Really? No.
So he faked that pretty well. Okay.
He cried.
He didn't have that eye look or anything like
No,
that.
he even cried.
He did cry.
Oh, yeah.
Legitimate cry? Well, maybe he
Legitimate
felt
tears.
sorry for what he did. Who knows? You
I
know?
do think there was a bit of that
There
in
could have been a
there.
little remorse.
Very little.
Okay, so does he like pick you up at the airport or how do you get there?
I had a rental vehicle.
All right.
I parked that at the motel. He wanted me to go off, and he kept telling me what direction to go. And I said, "Could we pull over here a minute at this parking lot?" And he said, "Sure." I said, "Listen, I'm going to explain to you how this goes. I don't go where you say. I go where I feel."
Yeah, that's right.
He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I went, "I'm thinking in my mind, sure you are." So we began, I would say to him, "Okay, go left here, go left or go right." And in one area I got to, I just hollered, "Stop the vehicle."
And you're still one-on-one with him.
I'm still one-on-one.
Okay. Now, was the body found? Had the body already been found?
No.
Okay. And is it in the woods? Where is it?
Looking for evidence at this point, and I
Okay.
knew I was looking for evidence. And I located the cell phone.
Hers or
Hers,
his? Hers.
his, I mean hers. But when we got out, he was, you could see visible, stress signs. He was fiddling.
He saw you find the cell phone?
Yeah, as I was walking the area, though, I kept glancing at him, and I said, "Start looking. I feel like something's here." You could see how he wasn't really looking down at the
All
ground
right.
and actively looking for
He's
anything, and he was
watching
fiddling with his
you.
cell phone, and the hands were going. You could see the nervousness. I'm
Yeah.
thinking, Oh, I'm hot on the trail, all right. Look at how
So
fidgety he
you're
is.
looking for her body with an eye on him to see if he's going to attack you. Is he behind you, side by side?
He was probably about 15 feet from me, so I had a good look at what all
Is
his
he in
fidgeting.
front of you or behind you?
Next to me.
Next to you.
We
Okay.
were kind of
15
walking
feet
the
away.
line and searching.
All right. And so go on. Tell me more.
I came up on this, and it looked like it was kind of down in the grass. And I'm thinking, what is that? Well, it's some dark colored. And so I got a little closer and looked, and I said, "There's a cell phone." So he runs over, and he looks. He goes, "It is a cell phone!" And he went to grab one. Whoa, 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 whoa! Don't touch! Don't touch! Don't touch! I said, "We can't touch anything." He goes, "That's my wife. I can touch." I went, "No, you can't. If even if that's not is your wife, not your wife, we have to at this point." Now we have to call law enforcement because this is something that they have to be notified and they have to come and handle this. We don't touch. So I called at that point law enforcement and said, I do believe I'm with, and I gave him his name and I said, I'm with this person. His wife is missing. He's reported her missing.
I mean, they already knew about the missing case, right?
Yeah, but I'm going over the I'm just doing the official thing.
Sure.
And plus I'm watching how nervous he's getting.
Yeah.
The more I'm talking about, oh, and she's missing
He's
and
there
he's
listening to you talk to the police?
right. Now
Oh.
he's really and he's just sweating now profusely. I'm like, okay, all
He's
right.
probably thinking this wasn't a good idea, bringing
No.
you in on it.
I'm pretty sure at that moment he was like, "Oh God, I thought
Well,
I
and he's
got rid of
already
that
a
thing."
suspect, isn't he?
No.
By the cops, he's
No.
well, they got to have thought, you always when the wife is missing, the husband always becomes the suspect.
He was cleared and had an alibi.
Huh.
So, but lots of people have had alibis and still did it.
Sure.
Those are easy to come by.
All right, we'll continue on with this.
So, we get the police out there and did all these things. Well, I did at that moment step aside with the officer and say, "Listen, I don't care what you believe or don't believe. That's really not my concern. Right now, my concern is my safety. Because I really feel like this guy did it. I'm
Yeah.
watching his body language. I don't have to be psychic to watch body language changes."
Right, exactly.
And I said, "You're an officer. You understand what I'm talking about." He goes, "I do." I said, "Well, I want to make sure I'm okay. I'd like you guys at least to be actively sort of involved and know what's going on."
Now, had you found the body at this point?
No.
Okay.
So this was the next day we continue on. And the detective called me and said, "Hey, I was thinking about just coming out and having a little talk with you and maybe see what you're doing." I went, "Oh, okay." And I could tell now the detective's kind of playing the
All
game.
right, now you're in your hotel. Does the killer, the husband, know where you're staying?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's not
Yeah, he
smart
came to
then.
pick me up.
Why'd you let him in on that?
You have to if you're gonna play it.
He
You got to
probably
play it
sat
well.
outside your hotel room all night in his car. That's
You
what I
know,
think.
I was a little tense.
All right, so the detective comes over.
Right. He goes, "Hey, so he goes, "I'm just kind of now getting into this stuff." I knew he was not really telling the truth, but he was, at this point, at least he listened to what I had to say. And he goes, "So where are your thoughts at on this, and where do you think we should be going?" And I'm like, "We? Oh, you're going with me. Great." So we all, went together
And
to several
did you lead
locations.
on with the detective that you thought the guy was the killer?
Oh yeah, at the very beginning when I met him
Okay.
over the cell phone, I pulled him aside and said that to him.
Keep your
I'm
hand on
very
your gun, officer, right?
yeah. I was very, very nervous and thinking, why am I doing this? Several times I thought, why am I doing this? What, in the name of finding somebody. Well, I did not actually make the find on this particular case. The actual officer that had been going with us, I described some areas and I couldn't figure out where they were. And he said, you know, that sounds extremely familiar and it sounds like this area. He said, what I'd like you to do is, you know, go to this place and I need you to just wait over there. He goes, and I want you to write down all the things you've been seeing. So, and he said this in front of the killer. He goes, so can you guys stay there? Of course, he was putting us in a public restaurant, which I was happy for.
Sure.
So I sat and I go, well, we're going to have to do what the officer says. We're going to have to sit there and we're going to have to rack our brains. And you write down, I gave him paper and pen. I said, you write down all the things that you remember before this incident occurred. Anything that you thought was suspicious or, you know, anything like that. I said, so when he comes back, we'll have everything together. So we did all that. Well, lo and behold, the officer was right. The area I described, he recognized it. Being from that area, of course they're going to.
Okay.
And they did find her.
They found her within what, a day or two?
Oh, a few hours.
A few hours. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how long had she been out there?
He took off.
How long had she been out there, Gail?
I believe at that point it was like 60 days.
Oh, gosh, somewhere. So she was decomposed.
Oh, yeah.
And did they ever, of course they performed an autopsy, but how did
right.
she die?
Well, he fainted when he found out.
He did. All right, but how was she murdered?
Strangled.
She was strangled out there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now we go back to him. He faints the body's found?
In front of the officers, he faints.
Legitimately.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Oh, you think
I've
faked it?
I've never seen anybody catch themselves as they fall.
Oh, okay. So he didn't go.
That
he didn't
one.
Hit the
I'm
ground.
Like, oh, he gently kind of, he went down, but it was like hand went back.
Okay.
You know, you know.
So at what point did he become the suspect and get arrested, or is he free?
At that point, he's free.
Oh, my God.
Now, I was now at that point of having to go home, and I told the detective, I have to return to my area. But, here's some stuff that I did see, whether you want to believe it or not. You know, he goes, well, I'm starting to really think something's going on here. I went, well, thank you.
That you were legitimate or that you were part of it?
That I was legitimate.
Okay.
And I said, and this is what I saw, and this is what I see where he was. I also look at the person that gave him the alibi. The problem is they left a paper trail. So they couldn't have been, he couldn't have been with them at this certain location because this person was here in another area. And if you pull the cell phone records and other stuff, you're going to find out that they weren't even in this state when they gave an alibi for him. He goes, we're going to be checking things out. 6 weeks later, though, he was arrested.
So when he's arrested, did they call you? Did they have the courtesy to let you know what was going on?
No.
They didn't do that.
So no.
How'd you find out about it? Just read about it in the newspapers? Or
friends that were in that area that I happened to know.
And as of now, where is he?
Locked up.
Locked up.
You got life.
You got life.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. All because he emailed you.
Yeah, mistake.
He might have, well, I still think he would have been a suspect, but he, did we ever get a motive for him?
You know, not really. And everything that was said and read, the police never really came up with a motive. I honestly felt that it was because he had someone else and was thinking that he needed to end it with the wife,
mm-hmm.
and she had a huge insurance policy. He had
old
gotten
insurance
policy. About That's a year right. and a half prior to that.
Yeah. And, of course, he's the beneficiary, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. That makes him a suspect right there, too. Wow. Now,
but he only got pinned with that murder. The little twist on that case is their child died 6 years prior.
Now, what's the tie-in with that, other than it was sad?
I really believe he murdered the child.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? Jeez. This guy was pure sick.
Of course, they didn't pin him with it. But, I mean, he's life in prison, but, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
No justice for the child.
Does the victim, the dead person, do the souls or the spirit ever come to you?
I do see them or talk to them. In a couple of cases that came in the book, you'll see one's called My Roommate, My Roommate. She came to me in complete and utter panic that her, and this is the one who's already passed, she was murdered, and we were looking for her body. She comes to me in a complete and utter panic, screaming, my roommate, she's next. I went, whoa. You know, I'm like, wait a minute. And it's all sinking in because it just hit me so fast as she's saying all this to me. I'm like, wait a minute, oh, you did live, you had a roommate. Oh, my gosh. You know, and then I'm trying to pull details from her, like, okay, what's going to happen? And then finding out that she's going to go out on a date with the guy who just got done killing her, the other one.
The other person, yeah.
Like, oh my. So I'm on the phone now with the detective. And he had reached out to me because the father came to me. And he said he rolled his eyes when the father first told me to contact the psychic. I'm like, okay, that's all right. I said, I'm okay with that. It's a common response.
Gail, when this happens, do you go into a different mode, or are you, in a trance state or anything like that?
I have, not always. I have gone some weird states, though, because my daughter claims that when I was on the trail of one of the bodies in the story, King of the One Word Clues, I walked across the highway and she grabbed my shirt and stopped me as I almost walked in front of cars. My cell phone rang and she goes, I just pulled it out of my pocket and threw it behind me and just kept going. She goes, it was like you weren't even there. I don't remember a lot of it happening. I just remember hearing the voices and talking to them, and it's like my whole world disappeared.
All right. Well, you stay with us, Gail. We're going to come back in a moment and talk more about missing and presumed dead. And also we'll take some phone calls from interested listeners about this really incredible topic.